Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio Governor John Kasich has said that the New Hampshire primary tomorrow could be the make-or-break moment for his candidacy for president. Columbus Dispatch Public Affairs editor Daryl Rowland has been on the road with Kasich for much of his campaign. Daryl joins us by phone now from New Hampshire. Welcome to the show, Daryl.
Thank you, Ann. It's good to be there.
So what are you seeing of the crowds coming to meet Governor Kasich on the ground in New Hampshire?
And right now I'm at a small town called Plaistow or Plastow. It's just about as far south in Massachusetts as you can get. I actually had to drive through Massachusetts to get here. It's just a few miles from the border, closer to Boston than Concord, for instance. But a lot of Republicans from across the border have moved into New Hampshire here. His crowds are getting larger and larger. His event now is at a local public library, and the room is not that bad, big, but they are just packed. They're flowing out the door. Yesterday, he had a couple of events in Nashua, one in the state capital, city of Concord. And the crowds are growing. And the question, however, for reporters to ask, does that mean his support is growing? Or does that mean, hey, we're getting close to the primary finally?
Right. Yeah, there was something you wrote, I don't know if it was in today's paper or yesterday's, just about how long it's taking New Hampshire voters to make up their mind. Of course, there was a debate on Saturday, and there's no way to poll between Saturday and today or tomorrow even. How do you judge where their heads are at?
Well, that's a great question. University of Massachusetts does do a daily tracking poll, so they have one day's worth of data. And that does show Senator Rubio from Florida, who's debate performance most people thought wasn't real good, ticking down a point or two. Governor Kasich's about the same. Jeb Bush is up. Interestingly, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who was Rubio's main attacker, his standing is not really increasing. But again, that's one day of a poll with lots of people undecided in a year in which polls had not necessarily met a lot. So that's what makes it so much fun.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest, Daryl Rowland, is public affairs editor at the Columbus Dispatch. He's been following the John Kasich campaign for president pretty much day to day since the beginning. He joins us from New Hampshire. That's an always interesting dynamic that Rubio might have been hurt by the attacks from Chris Christie, but Chris Christie didn't necessarily gain anything from that. That happens, right?
It does. And that was, back 2 or 3 months ago when Kasich briefly had the motif of going after Trump. Well, kind of going after everyone, but especially Trump. Mm-hmm. You were wondering, well, is he kind of going to do a public service here by maybe taking down Trump, but it would benefit perhaps the folks on the sidelines of the fight and not him, because they would both end up bloodied and the other people benefit. So that may be happening here. Chris Christie is hard to explain here. You go to his town hall meetings. I've been to two or three up here. Very enthusiastic crowds. It is not showing up in the polls. Now, again, if that debate increased his standing, that's not going to show up in the polls.
Right. It's nice to get a New York Times endorsement, but in the Republican primary phase, John Kasich has had to defend his conservative record because of that to a certain extent. At Saturday's debate, he listed his accomplishments and focused on job growth. Let's listen.
But once we have economic growth, I believe we have to reach out to people who live in the shadows. I believe we need to help the mentally ill, the drug addicted, the working poor. We need to help the developmentally disabled to rise. And we need to help our friends in the minority community develop entrepreneurship. In other words, in America, conservatism should mean not only that some rise with conservative principles, but everybody has a chance to rise regardless of who they are so they can live their God-given purpose. That's what conservatism should be.
What's your sense about how that's going to roll out in New Hampshire? It was one of the more succinct performances I've heard from him on that score.
Yeah, I think that plays well in New Hampshire. I mean, again, the audience is certainly not necessarily a cross-section of voters, but you heard the applause there. New Hampshire is more of a moderate state, especially on social issues. Fiscal issues, not so much. That's number one. Number two, it's a state where there are a great number of independent voters, at least from a party registration standpoint, or they're called unaffiliated up here. They can vote either Democrat or Republican. So of those folks, I've heard so many Democrats say, well, if I would vote for a Republican, it'd be you. So part of the dynamic is how competitive is the Democratic race going to be? Because these independents go back and forth, and a lot of their choice is based on where can I have the most impact with my vote. So right now, Bernie Sanders is up like 20 points. If that remains, they may make the judgment, maybe I'll jump in that Republican thing where, vote for Kasich, vote for Jeb Bush or whomever would have more of an impact.
And is there any sense about what would trigger that kind of a thing? Would it be 20 points or could it be lower or higher when it comes to the, the difference between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton?
Well, that's one of those slippery slope questions. It's, well, one of it's 18. Well, one of it's 16.
Right.
And, it's going to get down to each individual voter. And, you referenced the story I have in today's dispatch. Mm-hmm. About these people are maddening to some extent. They wait and wait and wait.
But isn't that typical?
It is to some degree, but I think this year they're taking it to an extreme. Now, of course, part of that's driven by the Republican field, even though a bunch have dropped out. We're still, eight candidates wide of those who have even a halfway realistic chance. So that's still pretty big. And the other thing is you sort of got Trump out there all by himself. He's got his own crowd. And then, as we've seen for the past several months, you've got that fight to be the non-Trump, or at least the non-Trump, non-Cruz candidate. And again, that involves Governor Kasich, former Governor Bush of Florida, Senator Rubio, and Governor Christie of New Jersey. And those numbers are just up and down so much, and they're all very close. The polling is just taking into account relatively small amounts of people. In other words, they have a large margin of sampling error.
Yeah.
So often the results are within the margin of error. So, and with all these undecideds, it's very volatile.
You can always sort of tell a candidate's chances by how his opponents respond to him or her. Kasich's popularity in New Hampshire has made him something of a target from other state governors in the race, including Jeb Bush. Here's a cut from a Jeb Bush ad criticizing Kasich's record, and I should say I think it's from Bush's non-affiliated super PAC,
right to rise.
Okay.
Do you regret your vote for the assault weapons ban in 94?
No, going back and regretting.
I voted for an assault weapons ban.
When you're governor for 8 years, you got a record, and here's mine. I earned an A-plus rating from the NRA. Florida's pro-gun laws have been the model for other states.
You work to expand Medicaid. You work with President Obama.
To give President Obama bipartisan cover on Obamacare. Your answer.
Yeah. One governor expanded Medicaid, and the other did, too. Well, I think that was wrong.
Very much going after John Kasich and that. Darryl Rowland, is that something that New Hampshire voters respond to?
Well, the more conservative ones will. And the question is, were they going to be Kasich people anyhow? Mm-hmm. Or are you talking to folks who would vote for a Cruz or a Trump anyhow? Because, it's not like Governor Bush has this real right-wing record or anything.
Right.
He is choosing a couple of the points on which he and the governor differ. And of course, again, that assault weapons vote that they refer to was 94, I think, in Congress. Kasich has since renounced that. The NRA has given him its full blessing, A-plus rating that Governor Bush talks about there in the super PAC ad.
Now, Governor Bush, Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida, he's brought in his mother, who is something of a superstar, Barbara Bush. She wasn't too keen on him running in the first place. What about that sort of prop in a campaign state like New Hampshire?
These candidates are bringing, anyone they can in. We had Barbara Bush in with her walker, walking into the Tilton Diner, which is north of Manchester and Concord, classic campaign stuff.
Yeah.
She said, I think everyone loves her. She joked about how, well, you won't see all this snow in my white hair and all that. And definitely love that. Does that translate to a vote? Who knows?
Yeah.
Kasich has seemingly about a third of the Ohio legislature up here pounding the ground for him. Rob Portman's been in state auditor Dave Yost. They're hardly the celebrities of Barbara Bush, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, he's got some ex-congressmen. Everyone has their group. And you know, it's amazing, the press release, you know, here's the, I don't know, the second cousin of the grandson of the former Speaker of the House is supporting me, so therefore vote for me. Uh-huh. It pretty much comes down to that.
Well, what does Kasich have to do in the next 24 hours to achieve, you know, even what he wants to, which is to have at least a strong third?
I think it's, I mean, he has touted his ground game left and right. His super PAC also has a very good ground game. We're going to see. I mean, traditionally that pays off. 2016's not been a traditional election year, but, you know, so the governor better hope at least it pays off enough where he does get that that top three finish that he really needs. And, he, you know, he really needs to finish above the other two governors remaining in the race, former Governor Bush and Governor Christie.
Mm-hmm.
If he finishes above Rubio, you know, they're going to be doing cartwheels. And, yeah, if it's, Cruz is sort of a mystery man in all this. But, yeah, if he would get a second or finish third, but only behind Trump and Cruz, they'd be really happy. Because, you know, from here you go into South Carolina, some southern states where Kasich's not going to be necessarily that strong. So he, and it's, as you, so as Stu pointed out, he pretty much bet it all here to finish, say, fourth or fifth. You know, that's not going to be a real good sign.
Yeah, well, like, you know, Cokie Roberts was saying on NPR this morning that it's going to have to be super strong because he hasn't invested much of anything in South Carolina. I mean, it kind of there or anywhere. She said if he can hold on till March to get to the Ohio primary, that's the best he can do.
Well, they may be underestimating South Carolina presence to some degree. As Super PAC talks about how they are the only ones organized in every congressional district. And the Super PAC is going on the air with TV ads today. Now, they're not the first, but they're also not the last. So, again, he's already said he's not going to win down there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really not Ohio on March 15th. It's Michigan on March 8th that is the pretty much a must win. Because at some point, you know, and you got to, if you really want to do this thing, you got to move on from respectable showings to actually winning.
You know,
and of course, they're thinking, well, just get us, and all these second tier candidates are thinking, well, just give me one on one with Trump, and I can take him out because he has such high negatives. And that's why they're all killing each other to be that one, to get into the finals. It's, so the semifinal round. It's just really a mess.
I know it's winner take all in the Ohio primary. Is that the way it is in New Hampshire?
No, it is proportional up here.
Okay.
So there'll be various numbers of delegates. So Governor Kasich almost certainly will come out here with delegates. I mean, heck, he even got one delegate from Iowa with, what, not even 3% of the vote.
Right.
So, but it's going to be more, people are going to be looking at that statewide total more than the delegate math so much. I mean, he's got to do well here. He himself has said he's got to do well here.
All right. So what are you doing for the next day? What's your plan here?
I'm basically just following him around. We are at the first of four events today. He ends up at 8 o'clock tonight. And really, that's not it. You know, in this day and age, you campaign on Election Day, too. So Kasich's got a bunch of quick stops tomorrow, more of a meet and greet, hi, how are you sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're already going right to the polls close tomorrow evening. And, you know, it's weird here in New Hampshire. Unlike Ohio, when everyone closes at the same time, they have staggered polling closing times. Like in Manchester, the largest city, it's not till 8 p.m.
Why is that?
Hey, it's New Hampshire. There's a lot of quirky things up here. And I think their voters are at the top of that list. And I say that with lots of respect and lots of love, having been here for so long.
Well, Darryl Rowland, I know you're super busy. Thank you so much for squeezing us in today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Ann. And thanks for reading us. We will give you the story live as it happens up here.
All right. That's Darryl Rowland, public affairs editor of the Columbus Dispatch. We'll return with our weekly reporters roundtable when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Well, Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's time for our weekly reporters roundtable. We just heard from Darrell Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch. He's following Ohio Governor John Kasich's campaign on the ground in New Hampshire, where the primary is taking place tomorrow for the presidential primary is taking place tomorrow. Joining us now in the studio, Bureau Chief of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Karen Kassler. Welcome back.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
And Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com. Welcome back, Jackie.
Glad to be here.
Okay. So did either of you listen to or watch the debate on Saturday night?
I did. I am a party animal. I watched the debate on Saturday night.
I did
yes.
not.
Yes.
So I think it's only the second one I've missed.
Yeah.
Give me your impressions.
It was a good debate, I thought. The first couple of minutes, though, and anybody who watched it remembers this. I remember watching or walking out of the room to go record something in the other room thinking, I can miss the introductions. You know, nothing's going to happen, right? And here, the introductions just completely get just completely botched, it seemed like. And so that just kind of made me think, is this going to be the tone? I mean, what's going to happen here? But I think overall, you know, for Kasich, for the three governors, Kasich and Christie and Bush, it was probably a pretty good performance. I think Christie ended up getting a lot of the attention for clashing with Rubio. But I think Kasich ended up with the second least talk time, but made the most of that limited talk time. He didn't get into any of the battles between the other candidates. He didn't jump into, I think he jumped in once to try to, you know, comment. But for the most part, I think he came away with this impression that he really wants to be a unifier, that he wants to be positive. I think that's the impression he wanted to leave. I think most people left with that impression.
And Darrell Rowland said that New Hampshire's more moderate conservative Republican state, so it might fly well there. But I'm just wondering, Jackie Borchardt, all that stuff is going to be saved for posterity right into South Carolina if Governor Kasich does make it that far. You know, there's a calculated risk in putting it out there like that.
Well, I don't think he said anything on Saturday that would get him in trouble in a later primary state. I think Kasich benefited from having other candidates such as Marco Rubio kind of stumble a little bit. And so he stood out at the end of the night. Kasich and Christie and Bush stood out as winning the debate. At least all the talking heads said so afterward. And Rubio, you know, who has been kind of declared the informal winner in previous debates, you know, he was getting a lot of flack for repeating talking points.
Well, he was getting a lot of flack from Chris Christie, but they all repeat talking points. What's new about that?
Well, that's true. But I think Christie did a really interesting thing in his repeated attack on Rubio's repeated statements.
Yeah.
It got to the point where every time Rubio talked, you almost could hear Chris Christie attacking him in your head.
And there he goes again.
Yeah. And it really kind of turned it on his head a little bit. And I think it left people with a different impression of Christie. I mean, anybody who's followed the campaign knows he can be an attack dog, you know, and he sure showed it in this debate.
Except he had this sort of gentle approach from what I heard from the cuts. He's just not experienced. He doesn't have the experience.
I think
he's not yelling and screaming or anything.
I think that was more for the speeches that he makes in New Hampshire.
Okay.
I mean, what I saw on Saturday night, he was
okay.
Right at him. And, you know, it's at this point, though, I think those four candidates, Rubio, Bush, Kasich, and Christie, are to the point where, you know, somebody's got to come out the winner of those four, and they all want to be that guy. And so they all have to try to find their niche and figure out exactly who's going to vote for me because of this. And so I think Christie kind of took on that, I'm going to be rough. I'm going to be what a lot of people have known me for. And Kasich then carved out this, I'm going to be positive. I'm going to uplift people, as he keeps talking about in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's, I think the problem has been for Bush and Rubio, where are we in this so-called establishment lane? Even though Kasich says he is not in the establishment lane, that's where people have put him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, his statements speak for themselves.
I don't know how he claims, because he was saying
it's
yesterday.
It's like he wants to have it both ways.
Well, exactly.
Well, the voters let him.
He was saying on CNN and Fox News yesterday that he's not an establishment candidate. He's an agent of change. And I don't know how you claim that you're not an establishment candidate and yet talk about all the years that you've spent as the governor of Ohio and a congressman and balancing budgets and this sort of thing.
Yeah, and then the whole Medicaid issue, he wants to have that both ways as well. He wants to say that he would have done that anyways. And in the Dispatch article today, it said, well, it's unlikely. Well, I would say it's flat out impossible to expand Medicaid to the lengths to which he did and get 100% federal funding of it for the first few years and then go to 90%. I mean, there's just no way the state could have afforded to do that.
Right. I mean, that's part of the appeal of expanding Medicaid is that the feds are footing the bill.
Right. Most of the bill for about 10 years. And it's just implausible. He couldn't have had that expansion.
Yeah, and he says he could, and
but
he would. And he says he would repeal Obamacare if he's elected. And I think you're right that there is an attempt to try to have it both ways here, to try to be considered a conservative who was opposing Obamacare, but yet still expanding Medicaid to try to benefit people, which he's talked about many times. So I think it is a situation of trying to work both sides.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. If you saw the debate. I did not see the debate on Saturday night, so I'm interested in people's impressions of what happened. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. Post your question or comment there. With me in the studio is Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com and also Kieran Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call. All right. So what about Trump? He's changed his ground game in New Hampshire. He's present. He showed up for the debate.
He's got a ground game, I guess, now.
He showed up.
Cookie Roberts this morning was talking about how he actually was on some of the morning shows and not
in
calling
person.
In from wearing his pajamas. It cracked me up.
Right. So what I mean, and he is expected to win in New Hampshire pretty easily. What happens if he shows up? What does it do to people like John Kasich?
Well, he's expected to win if you look at the polls. And I will be very interested to see how the polls turn out because they were wrong in Iowa.
Right.
And so, you know, they could be wrong this time as well. And, you know, if he does do well in New Hampshire, nobody's really surprised. If he doesn't do well, well, that just sets everything on a different path. And so, you know, going forward, I think that's going to be the question because he does not have the ground game that other campaigns do. I mean, Ted Cruz has a tremendous ground game from what I've been reading about. And obviously Kasich has been, he and his people have been tweeting all over the place about the organization they've had in New Hampshire. Kasich's talked about having an organization set up in South Carolina and Nevada, which is where we go next. So, you know, the question would be, would somebody be able to win a campaign without a good ground game? And, you know, Barack Obama really set the standard for this is the ground game you need to win because he had a tremendous organization.
Right.
And so is that what it takes for anybody to win?
Yeah.
But I think that was one of the takeaways from the Iowa caucuses that, you know, Trump didn't win, but, you know, he wasn't making inroads there the way that Ted Cruz was. And, you know, up until this point, yes, Trump has been leading in the polls. And meanwhile, people have been saying, oh, but it's not going to last or he won't be the eventual nominee. And it's because of the fact that he's running such a non-traditional campaign and that he doesn't have those networks within the states.
You know, I meant to ask Daryl and I forgot, Daryl Rowland, how much weather affects voters in New Hampshire. Now, here we know.
Well, it apparently affects candidates because Donald Trump had to skip a rally last week. So
right. Well, yeah, I mean, if you can't get there. But I'm just wondering, you know, people who live there and are accustomed to the weather, I guess, we know that in Ohio, the weather's so unpredictable, people aren't as accustomed to it. If we get 2 to 4 inches over the next few days, that's going to be, we just know, start out a half hour to an hour earlier to get to work. But we know it'll affect voting. I don't know if it will in New Hampshire or not, if it's as much of a harbinger or not.
I would imagine not.
Yeah.
Having lived in an extreme weather state before, you find a way to get out and do what you need to do.
Shaw in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah. I had a couple different questions. One was they haven't required the candidates this year, I know Romney suggested it, but they haven't released their tax returns, and Kasich's net worth is like all over the board. And I'm wondering his hesitation on that. You know, he took that $400,000 when the Lehman Brothers went bankrupt. The other quick point was everyone in this is like pure politics when someone goes up there and presents themselves as a unifier, a uniter, and you look at Kasich's past actions, that's not been the case. Even a couple of weeks ago, he called guys at the Ohio State House thugs.
And the Democrats, yeah.
You know, there's a whole difference between how he's presenting himself in New Hampshire and the reality in Ohio calling a cop idiots. He's going to be the king. He'll get rid of teachers' lounges. It's just pretty outrageous that people, even in the news, then think, this man is really, you know, he's a moderate and he's bringing people together. That's not Kasich as we know him, is it?
Well, you called it politics.
I was interviewed by a reporter who's following Kasich for the public radio station up in New Hampshire. And I actually made that point that Democrats here would say very clearly he is not the unifier that he's said he is. Claim that he is on the campaign trail. And there are plenty of examples of that, which Shah just gave a couple of them right there. That you know, every time I hear people on national media talk about how Kasich is very popular in Ohio and overwhelmingly won the last election, I always have to think, he didn't really overwhelmingly win the last election. It was really a totally different scenario where the Democratic candidate pretty much imploded. So it's the story is a lot more complicated. If he does become the nominee, obviously there are going to be plenty of Ohio Democrats and some Ohio Republicans who may say, hey, wait a minute, this isn't exactly the story.
His entire record, it'll all come out in the wash.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. The national press, you know, they just have, I mean, when you're having 12, 13, now down to 8 or 9 candidates to cover, it's different.
I was going to say, some of these things have already, I've seen, get national attention, like the Ohio Department of Education charter school story.
Yeah.
That's, I've seen that in a couple national news sources now. And it's funny to see reaction that Ohio's not, you know, reporting on this. And it's like, well, we did last summer when it happened. And I think that you're absolutely right. The further he moves forward, the more that I think you'll be able to see that what Ohio knows bubble up.
Shah, thanks a lot for that call. I wanted to get back to the question he made about wealth, personal wealth, and how that plays into the appeal of candidates. Is it different for the Republicans than it is for the Democrats, first of all? Because that's been an issue in the Democrat debates between Bernie Sanders, and not necessarily wealth as much as where the wealth comes from. What about Republican voters? Do you think they care as much about his role at Lehman Brothers?
I don't think at this point in the campaign, no.
Yeah.
And I think it's been an issue with the Democrats because one of, you know, Bernie Sanders' big issue is income inequality, and that the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. And he's made wealth a huge, you know, point in his campaign. And so then, you know, the Democrats say, well, you know, Hillary Clinton has this, you know, massive, you know, foundation, and she did the speaking fees. And so I could see where that's developed into a point over on the Democratic side. But for the Republicans, it hasn't emerged yet. But if you look, I mean, they're all wealthy. They're all worth millions of dollars.
I think one of my favorite Hillary responses when someone asked her about that in that debate last week, and they said, well, you know, do you think it's worth it? You know, whatever it was, $40,000 or $50,000 or whatever she made. She goes, well, they thought I was worth it.
Well, that's what they offered.
That's what they offered.
That's what they
I
offered.
Mean,
and it was
I thought
wasn't
that was
$650,000.
I don't know. I didn't hear that to the complete.
Yeah.
It
was a lot.
It was, but.
I don't know how she could have won whatever she said with that answer. I mean,
I thought it was a honest, you know.
Yeah. Hey, I'm worth that much money. I don't know if that's the right answer, or the right answer should have been, oh, I should have turned it back. Is that the right? I don't know what the
because,
right answer is.
No, because, I mean, in my opinion, it would have been, no, you can't regret
once
you've done it. I mean, it's, you know, you could still give it back for that matter. So who's going to do that? But, the whole personal wealth thing, it's a given now. And they've always been relatively wealthy through time. I mean, look at Mitt Romney.
Right. Well, and Donald Trump brags about how he's self-funding his campaign.
Right.
And you know, he even said, and I thought this was just hilarious to hear somebody say it out like this, because it's true, that he's so many millions of dollars under budget because he hasn't had to spend any money on TV time because the networks keep putting him on for free.
Right.
And, you know, so it's the wealth, I think, I'm not sure how the average Republican feels about it. And I don't know who the average Republican is, to be honest. But I think it may matter less, like what Jackie was saying, on the Republican side than it does on the Democratic side for right now.
Mm-hmm. So the Bernie versus Hillary thing, what do you make of Gloria Steinem giving millennial women a talking to about Hillary? Like, they need a history lesson about what Hillary's been through and what she represents and that sort of a thing.
I think she even realized herself that was a pretty stupid thing to say on
Gloria
on national
Dunham?
TV. Yeah, she had an apology on Facebook saying she misspoke or something to that extent, or chose the wrong words. Whatever you say in an apology. I mean, it was pretty divisive comment. She basically alleged that young millennial women who follow Bernie Sanders do so because they're more concerned with boys and the boys like Bernie, and that's why they support Bernie.
Well, I think there is a frustration for older feminists who are watching younger women grow up in an era where abortion rights are legal and you know, these sorts of things, where maybe these women don't understand the struggle that came to get to this point, to get to Roe versus mm-hmm. Wade. And so I think, you know, that comes from a little bit of frustration maybe on that part. But it wasn't the best thing to say at this point, probably.
It was pretty unusual. We will continue our conversation with my guest, Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com, and also Kieran Kassler from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, where she is Bureau Chief. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly Reporters Roundtable. It's not super round, although there are three of us, so we can make a circle if we had to. With me in the studio, Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com, and also Kieran Kassler, Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Can we talk a little bit about the whole lead poisoning issue? Sherrod Brown has called for some legislation to, more than anything, dictate how governments are supposed to respond and notify the public when something like this happens. And this is one of my moments of no duh. I mean, why do you have to pass a law to tell the government to do what it's there to do?
Because it hasn't been done, I guess, is the answer. But I know there's some legislation here at the state level as well mm-hmm. that would require the notification of a community within 30 days of something like this showing up in the water.
Within 30 days?
Well,
to me,
but it wasn't like in Sebring and Mahoning County, that's not what happened. It had been months. And so certainly people would want to know that that lead is in their water or some sort of dangerous, potentially dangerous substance is there, so that they can make their own choices and decide what they want to, how they want to handle it. And certainly for the community to start reacting and pushing for something to change to improve the situation. So it does seem like one of those, why don't we already have this in place? But apparently it's not in place.
Well, and there is, they do have, I believe it's 18 months to come up with the Ohio EPA has 18 months to come up with a plan to deal with, you know, when this happens. And Brown's legislation would push that to 6 months. And again, it's one of those where it's like, wait, they have a year and a half to you know, figure out how to fix the problem. So,
but at least people are notified in the meantime. And can avoid consuming
now,
the water.
Now, I could understand that there might be some people who say, hey, we don't want to unnecessarily panic people because we don't want everybody to think that the Flint, Michigan situation is happening right now, right here. But, yeah, the idea of being informed as a citizen is really important, I would think, to most people.
Here's another thing I don't understand. Something as fundamental as this treatment that keeps the water from corroding the pipes. We have millions of miles of lead pipes across this country. That's not going to get replaced overnight. In fact, much of it never will be replaced. So in the meantime, we have to treat our water with these anti-corrosive chemicals, whatever it is that they put in there. That's a choice. In Flint, they could just decide not to treat the water with something that prevents lead poisoning. That's another no-duh moment for me.
It's a horrible situation. I mean, what's happening in Flint, it's one of those things where you watch it and you think it could conceivably happen anywhere. Because like you just said, there's millions of miles of corroded old pipes throughout the country that people are just living with. And replacing that kind of infrastructure, nobody has the money to do that.
Right.
And it's one of those projects where it's like replacing the roof of your house. It's something that you don't want to spend the money on because it's you can't see it. You can't enjoy that. Whereas if you've got money in the community, you want to build something that everybody can look at and point to.
Yeah, you know, I remember when we got our new gutters. It's just people just weren't really – they didn't care.
It's not like getting the new living room set, you know?
They didn't have to come over and see it.
I know. It's not like adding a sunroof or sunroom on the back of your house, you know? But it really does point to a big problem of infrastructure, crumbling infrastructure, roads and pipes and all these different things. And these are serious issues. And – you know, just this to try to notify people when there's a potential problem brewing. That's pretty basic, you'd think, as you're saying. But there are reasons, I guess, why not?
Yeah, it sort of raised awareness about, once again, about water issues. And there was a story, I think, in the Dispatch this morning about how much water is going into fracking, that it doubled in 1 year, how much water. Confusing water and money, but it is a currency or will be someday going into fracking. It's doubled from 2014 to 2015. These are real issues about stuff that's vitally important to us.
Right. And the water that goes into fracking is absolutely a huge issue. There was a whole the whole Great Lakes Compact dealt with some of that and whether water could be diverted in certain places and that sort of thing. And you know, people will say that water's the kind of thing that wars get started over. So it's extremely important. And the convenience factor. I mean, NPR did a great piece about just kind of following one woman throughout the day and how she has to avoid using tap water.
Yeah.
And, you know, how she has to shower. It's a whole process. And she can't cook like we take advantage of, you know,
it's more than a boil alert.
Right.
It's a lot more complicated.
And it's just extraordinary to think that you'd have to live your life not just for a day or two, but every day like this until the problem is fixed. I can't wrap my brain around it.
Mm-hmm. So what's coming up this week? Daryl Rowland said that half the Ohio General Assembly is in New Hampshire right now.
That's right.
Exactly.
Well, yes, and that would explain why the House session for tomorrow has been canceled. It will be held in New Hampshire.
Yeah, really. Well, I mean, that's...
Any news on the State of the State address?
No. I think...
I'm getting nervous.
Well, why? Are you giving it?
No.
But somebody does have to. I should say that.
Someone
there does
to
have
do
to be a State of the State address. The governor does have to give one. So the question is, of course, whether it's going to be before or after the March 15th primary.
And where.
My guess, and I have no...
Wait a minute. Yeah. You think he could wait? I thought it had to be done in February.
No. Oh, no. He's only done one in February. Kasich. He's done most of his in March. Wait,
wow.
I take that back. One in March. The rest have been in February.
Okay.
But yes, absolutely, he can do it in March.
Okay.
There's no timeline on that the speech has to
Didn't
be given.
Know that.
Yes.
Okay.
But it does have to be given to a joint session of the legislature, which is why he has to go to the legislature and ask for permission to move it when he does.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, when you look at the map of Ohio, we've gone to Steubenville, Lima, Medina, Wilmington. Southeast Ohio seems open. So, you know, Portsmouth, Athens, Marietta, somewhere in that area. That's my guess. And I guess based on absolutely nothing other than that, what I just told you.
Right.
So.
Okay. So anyways, legislature's not in session tomorrow. So no hanky panky there.
We'll be there. We'll be back on Wednesday, though. And before this last little 2-week break that they took, the defund Planned Parenthood bill had cleared the it was on its way to a House vote. The Senate made some changes to the bill, and the House decided to recess without coming back and voting on it. So presumably that will be on the agenda, on the calendar for Wednesday.
And again, that defunds, it just zeroes out funding.
State funding
yes. for Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean things will close?
Planned Parenthood says no. It's not going to shut down their 27, 28 centers around Ohio.
And as far
Ohio.
As locations where abortion services are located?
No. I believe 3 of those provide abortion services. But this money is specifically for like cervical cancer screenings, HIV and AIDS testing, sex ed programs.
The money that the state's zeroing out would go to things like that.
Right. And these are mostly programs. These are mostly programs that where they partner with like a public health department or a city or you know, some other entity to provide services.
And I think there's going to be a lot of attention on the Capitol bill coming up. The Capitol reappropriations bill is being discussed right now. But the Capitol budget, the cities were all turning in their Capitol appropriation requests, their wish lists. Mm-hmm. And one of the big ones that got attention was the Browns wanting to have $5 million to build a facility down here so the Browns can come down and do training camp here. And what I want to know is, does Columbus get a vote on that? Because I'm not sure we want the Browns down there.
I think there was an uproar.
And I say this as a Browns fan.
There was an uproar in Northeast Ohio, but I think there was like a much smaller uproar down here, I think, for people saying, wait a minute.
Yeah, the Northeast Ohio complaints are that, why are you spending state money to move them out of our backyard?
Yeah, it's taxpayer dollars that would pay to move the training camp for 3 weeks.
What's the logic of this?
Okay, so here's the logic. From the Columbus partnership is that it's actually not a Browns training facility. It's a year-round youth activities facility that the Browns would use during 3 weeks in the summer.
Well, and I think the Browns have wanted to try to build a fan base here because Columbus is really Bengals Browns territory. Half
they need
and
all
half.
The fan base. They can.
Well, I know. Here's a way to build
God
a fan base:
people.
Win some games. That's the best way to build a fan base. I mean, look at the Steelers fan base, the Steelers fan base in Columbus is pretty big, and it's not because Pittsburgh's close. You know. I mean, but that's an issue.
And they've been talking about moving their training camp for a while. That wasn't the news. The news was more that Columbus was willing to partner with them to build them a fancy new facility to do that here.
What's a training camp like in Cleveland? What's wrong with it?
Nothing. It's fine.
It's
in Berea, which is
it's
you know, generating buzz,
been, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I used to live not too far away from it. And anyway, there's so many jokes. I'm just so glad football's over finally, so we can focus on baseball, which really matters.
I loved the commercials last night.
Oh my gosh! But you know, anyway, the capital budget—that's going to be the next big thing, I think, on the horizon. It's one of those things that you know has to be done. Doesn't get a ton of attention once people put out their wish lists and everything.
I can't remember now farther back than Governor Kasich, but it hasn't been as big of an issue as it used to be. It used to be just, you know, filled with, you know.
Well, and I think part of that is because
treats and surprise, you know.
Well, and Kasich's also done this mid-biennium review MBR thing every other year, so the non-budget year, and this is a non-budget year.
Even for the capital budget?
Well, I think that the MBR sometimes took away attention from the capital budget.
Well, there wasn't really a capital budget for a cycle there.
Right, because of the recession.
Right. So, you know, now it's kind of had – and without this usually the MBR – with all sorts of other little tax change policies and things kind of overshadows the capital budget. And also I think because Ohio has more, you know, our revenues are up, we're able to spend more on projects. So it's actually, a tangible process.
I like how you how MBR just rolls off your tongue as if it didn't even exist, 7 years ago. Yes.
Well, it's got so much stuff in it when it is proposed that it's hard to define it as anything other than, well, it's a budget update. It's a mid-biennium review. I mean, that's technically what it is. And Kasich's people have even made fun of us for using MBR, but they're the ones that came up with it,
right.
Because it's not quite a budget corrections bill.
It's more than a budget corrections
more
bill,
than that.
But it's not like a whole new
budget.
But
it's not a whole new budget. It's in between. And then through the legislative process, it just gets weighted down with more things from lawmakers that they would like to see happen.
Yeah, the first MBR was where we first got Kasich's severance tax proposals.
Yes.
Yep.
And so, you know,
which
that's,
has gone anywhere?
Not currently.
No.
No.
Nope.
No. There was a report that was done that said, if we do this, we should do it slow. And that's it. That was last October.
And talk about slow.
Yeah.
This is slow. Glacially slow. I just lost my train of thought. I can't do that when I'm the moderator.
Well, you can just keep keep on going like they did on the debate, you know, and half the candidates weren't even on the stage and they just kept on going.
Yeah. What happened there?
It was a blown intro. It sounded like there were a lot of people in a small space applauding for the candidates. Candidates didn't hear their cues right. And instead of, okay, you've been in a wedding where, you know, they tell you, just keep walking, just go, you know? And that's what these candidates should have done. Just go. Start walking. And Ben Carson stopped walking and then everybody kind of piled up behind him. And it just, and even the stage manager was waving at him, go. And he just stood there. And
well, how do you do? You guys haven't mentioned nary a word about Ben Carson.
He got the least amount of talking time.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, by about 2 minutes. And he had a couple of little quips, but you just have to wonder, if he's going to be much further than New Hampshire. I mean, there are reports that he's running out of money and just I don't know that the fire that he had earlier is really keeping up with him.
Right. Other issues we've talked about, the funding for Planned Parenthood, anything else top of mind?
The House Medicinal Marijuana Task Force
have
their first meeting on Thursday where they're actually going to take testimony from people on the issue. A pair of senators, Senator Kenny Yuko and Dave Burke, have been traveling the state. They were in Cincinnati last week.
What are they learning? Do you guys have any idea?
Apparently, I haven't been to either of them, but from what I've heard, they've been very well attended, and a mix of people who are, you know, in favor of medical marijuana for their own, you know, personal benefit or for family members or friends, and then also people who say, you know, that this would be bad for Ohio and we don't know much about it and we shouldn't, you know, go down that path. So I think they're getting a good mix of opinions. And I know that they're also receiving a lot more, you know, calls and emails than people who show up at these mm-hmm. things, which was, you know, kind of their intent, kind of just putting out the call. And they do plan on coming back and doing one in Columbus, but that time hasn't been set yet.
And I think the question is going to be whether they're actually going to have recommendations. The House Task Force has a deadline of March 31st to come up with some recommendations. And the question is going to be, are those recommendations going to be for legislation or is it going to be a kind of let's sit and wait on this a little while, which is going to upset the people who were hoping that this could come, that there would be some sort of medicinal marijuana legislation coming forward.
Some couple major funders from Responsible Ohio.
Right. Yeah, who had, you know, there had been talk about Responsible Ohio coming back to the ballot this year. And, you know, that's not going to happen now. And there are some people who are wondering, are these two, this listening tour and this task force, are they stalling tactics or are they really going to produce anything? And certainly, you know, there are folks who say, no, we're going to do this. We're going to do something with this. We just want to find out what Ohioans want.
Well, of course, there's the other group out of Washington that's definitely
they've already
going
said
forward.
Yes. And that would make this
ballot issue.
That would make this ballot really interesting if that one makes it. And there's also this Drug Price Relief Act that's now gone to the legislature. This is a group out of California that wants Ohio to pay the same amount for drugs, no more
than the state of Ohio.
Yes, the state of Ohio, no more than the Federal Veterans Affairs Administration pays, which they say will save the state a lot of money. But if this does, the legislature now has it. They have 4 months to act on it. If they don't, it could go to the ballot. If they get enough signatures, the pharmaceutical lobby is going to be all over that and spending a lot of money against it.
Is this the case in California?
It's on the ballot in California
this
year.
They've already spent, the pharmaceutical lobby's already spent $38 million against it in California. And the estimates are they could go as high as $100 million against it. So that's a huge issue.
So that's why they have to charge us so much money for our prescriptions, is because they have these important battles to fight.
That's one way to look at it.
They say these capping the prices would limit consumers' access to drugs and that sort of thing. So we'll hear plenty about it if it does make the ballot.
All right. It's going to be an interesting ballot in November. That's for sure. We'll have plenty of reporters' roundtables leading up to that, thankfully. Thanks to Karen Kassler for joining us today to talk about it.
I hope I didn't take too much talk time. Sorry, Jack.
We're not measuring the minutes.
We're not like
we don't
like
count quotes. We don't do any of that here. Karen Kassler,
like
she's bureau chief.
Have a rebuttal for that.
You mentioned my name.
You mentioned my name was mentioned.
Bureau chief for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me,
Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.